Fine.
Yay! Everyone's here.
Hooray!
All right. I'm enjoying this already.
It's pretty exciting when technology works.
Technology works, as it often does not on our podcast for some reason. all right. Well, this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I'm Christian Horn. I'm here with my pal Paul Edwards and a returning Corey Blake.
Yay!
Corey Blake is back. You were missed at Comic-Con, Corey.
Thanks so much. Thank you. I missed going.
Yeah.
But things happen.
No stress and, not having to deal with the crowds and all that. There's something to be said about
that. Yeah, that was nice. That was nice to wake up Saturday at, 11 or something. And
shit, really? I can't even do that in real life. What are you talking about? 11? What time do you go to sleep?
Like 10, I don't know, 10 or 11 or 12 or something like that, around there.
Are you serious? So you're sleeping for like a full 12 hours?
Yeah, if it's not full 12 hours, then I failed as a person.
Jesus Christ. Wow, I'm lucky if I get like 6 or 7. That's amazing. Oh, I'm so jealous. All right.
Well, by that time on Saturday, I think I had already walked like 4.5 miles.
Yeah, I know, right? Something was wrong with the pedometer on my the pedometer app on my phone. It says I only walked 3 miles the whole weekend, and I was like, no way. It's like a mile from my hotel room all the way to the convention center. There's no way I only walked 3 miles. I was kind of pissed off about that. Anyway, so I guess the big subject for this week, I think one of the biggest announcements at the con, which Corey, I think you called out first on your Facebook page, was the fact that Comixology, right, mm-hmm. is going to offer DRM free, as in digital rights management, free backup files for any comic that you purchase through their website. But not any comic, just certain publishers, right?
Right. Yeah, there's certain publishers that have signed on. Obviously, they get the final call on what if it's DRM free or not, I imagine. And so certain publishers have jumped on, and then I very much suspect others will follow.
Yeah. But right now, it's pretty much like Image and Dynamite and something called like Monkey Brain Studios and a couple of pretty much just I don't see Image as being small, but pretty much a lot of the small press right now.
Yep. Thrillbent as well, which is a very...
Oh, Thrillbent. But that's where I kind of... I'm confused because I guess I haven't checked out Thrillbent in a while. I used to look at their stuff all the time, but I had heard that Thrillbent had turned into a subscription service. Is that right? Or are they still offering free books?
I need to look. I don't think I've visited since they announced that, and I wasn't exactly clear if it was that you could pay or that there's certain... It might be certain back issues that you pay.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I don't remember now the details of that announcement.
I'm kind of looking at it right now. Hold on a second. Oh, yeah. Subscribe for $3.99 per month. I just looked at this comic, The House in the Wall, Chapter 4. And it says $3.99 per month. That's weird because it used to be free.
Yeah.
So I wonder what happened.
Well,
to make them change it.
They're probably trying a different model to make some money. That's an interesting idea. It's subscription. You pay $3.99 and you get sort of carte blanche across the site. Is that the way I understand it?
I'm not sure. All it says when I click into each individual comic is that it says $3.99 per month. So I don't know if that's per each comic or, you know, which, no offense, I mean, I really liked what Mark Waid was trying to do, but even some of the, if it's like $3.99 per book, I mean, you're only really getting a couple of pages per week, right? I mean, it wasn't like full comic book page content, I don't think.
Yeah, it depends on the, you know, I think each team kind of works at their pace or whatever. So yeah, I think it depends. We should definitely make clear that what we're talking about is thrillbend.com.
Yeah.
But Thrillbend also compiles their issues and then offers them on Comixology. And so when we're talking about the DRM free, that's just in the Comixology environment or platform.
Huh. So Comixology has Thrillbend as its own publisher. Huh.
Yeah, I was looking at Monkey Brain, and they're only 2 years old.
Uh-huh.
They're like a digital first publisher.
Exactly. And so what they're doing is basically making all their stuff available through the Comixology platform, and everything's available for purchase there through Comixology, and looking at there, apparently you can also buy sort of bundles through them, where you just buy, you know, basically whole runs of entire series and things like that.
Yeah, it looks like what Thrillbent is offering, I'm looking at Albert the Alien, and on Comixology it's like $2 per issue. And hold on, let me click through, and then I think it doesn't give you like a page count or anything like that. And I wonder through the Comixology, because that's what Thrillbent kind of became known for, wasn't like limited animation. It was like kind of the way pages would kind of switch on the display. Like, you know, there would be fade-ins and, you know, something would move. And so it wasn't animation. It wasn't limited animation. It was, I don't know what you would call it.
A little similar to what Marvel was doing with their Infinity comics.
Yeah.
Just sort of digitized transitions, really, is sort of the big thing. So DRM free, Corey, or is it Christian? Somebody on one of your Facebook pages, like their immediate reaction was, oh, so I can like then make copies and give them out to everybody, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
which.
That's what I think most people think of when they hear DRM free. But,
yeah.
But why is it such a big deal for everybody?
We have no answer.
No, one of the biggest announcements to come out of Comic-Con, and we really...
We have nothing to say.
Why is DRM free so important?
The big deal of it is that previously to now, and for the rest of Comixology still, for now, is that what you're basically paying $3.99 or $2.99 or even $4.99, basically the cover price of a print comic. You're paying that price to essentially look at Comixology's files, and so so if a comic is released and then recalled, as has happened, or if Comixology's servers go down, which has happened, then you lose what you've purchased, and you lose access to it. You know, obviously, Comixology has recently been purchased by Amazon, and so they're pretty stable. But you never know if in 5 years Amazon's like, you know what, I'm kind of over the whole comics, the whole digital comics thing. Forget it, shut it down. And
yeah.
I think the odds of that are pretty slim. But the fact is that you're basically leasing is really technically what you're doing, is you're basically leasing rights to a file that you can view in Comixology's controlled environment, which you can only access online or on their apps. And so if you log off, you can't see it, although they did start to offer the ability to download a limited number of them. Mm-hmm. Sort of locally, but even that was limited, and if you're doing guided view, it becomes very limited, and so there's all these kind of restraints that you are trapped in. And this ability allows you, this DRM free, allows you the ability to download your own copy to your own computer and to wherever, And so you can, it's a PDF file or a CBZ file, which is kind of a comic book reader friendly file that works pretty similar to it as a PDF. And and so you have the ability to, you know, to look at that file whenever you want. So you could print it out. You could disconnect your computer from the wall, shut off your Wi-Fi, and never go on the internet again, and read that file.
Well, good.
That
that's my plan.
And
that,
good, perfect. And I mean, that was the long and short of it, at least with me with Comixology. It was the basic fact that you were not getting a physical, not a physical file, but you weren't getting a digital file to keep, like, for yourself. You know what I mean? And that was the thing that why I wouldn't. I mean, it honestly, between you guys and me, I mean, it's easy enough to take something on Comixology, you know, do a screen grab and be able to keep the image. I mean, that's not hard to do. And if someone is, you know, productive enough or has enough time on their hands, which God knows I don't, you know, but like you could literally, it's the internet and, you know, there's kids on the internet and you could probably, you know, create your own archive of CBZ or CBR files using, you know, using the stuff that you find in Comixology. It wouldn't be that hard, to do.
Or write a script that does it for you.
Which somebody actually did.
Which I'm not advocating.
No, but somebody actually did, and it showed up on the torrent sites like about a year and a half ago, and it got pulled down like right away. It was pulled down like right away. It showed up, and somebody had figured out some sort of, I don't know what they were doing, but I know that there was a big story. I think I saw it on Bleeding Cool that somebody had figured out a way to run like an application or something through your browser or, you know, because because Comixology does store something on your hard drive to let it know that you have access to these books. I've never taken the time or, you know, looked into like, what is it that is on my, because, you know, you have a library, like through the app, like on your phone and stuff like that. So it has something on there so that you can read your comics, but I don't know what that is. But, you know, the long and short of it is that now there are some publishers that are going to let you keep your files. I mean, you know, and that's kind of a big deal to me. I mean, I don't know. And it was the one thing that was really, that and the price point were the two things that were keeping me from like just going whole hog on Comixology.
Right, and I think it's worth mentioning that a few of the publishers, Image Comics, Top Shelf Productions, which are fantastic, and Thrillbent, those three have previously on their own, they sell digital copies of their comics on their own site.
Exactly.
And they have already been doing DRM-free file backup files as well. So the ground has kind of been broken already by these three publishers. And also in Comixology, there's sort of an indie way to have your comics on distributed through Comixology. It's called Comixology Submit. And so all those creators can also choose to do DRM-free as well. So it's these six, I think it's about six or seven initial publishers, and then anybody in Comixology Submit that decides to do it as well.
Yeah. Hey, this is interesting because the one thing that I noticed on the Image site, because they, as far as I'm concerned, were kind of the leaders in this, saying like, let's, at least they're the first sort of big publisher that I knew about that was letting people keep the files. But I remember one of our friends of the podcast, Don Lund, had talked about the Savage Dragon, and then a couple of other friends I knew were trying to convince me to read the Savage Dragon, and you know, the Image site had only the current stuff, and I'm looking on Comixology right now, and it looks like they have at least like, it looks like they have up to issue 196 on their site, so they have everything from number one all the way to 196. And then it seems that there's some sort of thing here on Comixology that you can subscribe to the series.
Right.
So, you know, which lets you look at the back issues and collected editions.
I think on Comixology, subscribing, just when new issues come out, you automatically are charged and you get them in your account.
Oh, this subscription is for new issues in the series. Okay. You will not receive the current issue, back issue. Okay, I see. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was mistaken by that. So, in any case, you know, you're looking at Savage Dragon, you know, just to use as an example. You know, it's $2 an issue up until you get to what looks to be at least the most current one that they have. 196 is $4 an issue. So, 199... For if you are able to keep these image files, I don't think that's such a bad deal.
No,
yeah,
no,
that's better.
That's not bad at all because, you know, I mean, that's what 1980s pricing for comic books.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing is that, you know, I mean, for me, it's like for a digital file, like anywhere between 99 cents to like $2, I'm kind of okay with. Once you start getting into 3 or 4, like I'm a little bit like, yeah, why? Because, you know, and I saw a comment on your, because Corey wrote an article and everyone should check it out, about for Robot Six about this issue. And I saw in the comments there was a guy who was like, you know, a guy who was like, well, the prices should go down, you know, using my reasoning, because you're not printing them on paper. And another guy was like, well, that's bullshit. Do you actually think that the cost of paper like raises that much of a cost? And I'm like, yeah, you idiot. Of course, moron. Like that's
because you're manufacturing a product itself, you know, a physical thing itself. I mean,
yeah,
there are steps that go into that, and a person, you know, there are people involved at each step there that need to be paid. And
yeah, well, and just not even, I mean, as you and I discovered, Paul, when we did our little mini comic like years ago, the cost of printing, it's expensive, especially a comic book. So if you even just take the ink out, take the laser or whatever separations, take the actual paper and, you know, transporting it to a comic book shop and blah, 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 costs should go down. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
storage,
I mean,
you're not paying, you know, the distributor, you're not paying a warehouse to store it. You're not, you know, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think? How do you guys think that this sort of thing, I mean, obviously it's not every publisher, Corey, you know, our friend, yours and mine, Doug, you know, he basically said that he couldn't access some of this stuff. What do you know about that?
Yeah, that was interesting, and I didn't realize that until he brought that up. And so Dynamite Entertainment, which is one of the initial publishers, they carry a lot of licensed books, which means a lot of books that are properties that are, you know, Battlestar Galactica or, you know, what's the thing called? You know, like movies and TV shows.
They do a lot of licensed stuff.
Yeah, and
IDW too. Was IDW included in that? I don't think so. No,
they're not in that initial thing. So Dynamite would have to get permission from each of those license holders to allow that level of, you know, I'm sure their agreements allow only so much, and so that I'm sure that's probably why is that all the licensed stuff is not yet able to be downloaded as a backup file, as that DRM-free file.
Yeah, but do you think that something like that might occur in the future? You think that they still have deals that they still have to process or jump through hoops? I mean,
yeah,
I wonder how long this DRM thing has been in the planning, you know?
Tom Spurgeon, who runs comicsreporter.com, and he had spoken to some of the a few major publishers at Comic-Con after this was announced. And a few of them said that they were going to be involved in it, but they intended to be, but they were too tied up with the Comic-Con ramp up and, you know, getting all that stuff sort of situated. Obviously, that's a big deal for comic publishers. So that kind of gave the impression that maybe this was a little bit of a recent thing.
Yeah.
It seems to be, you know, definitely the way that things are slowly moving toward.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at music, I mean, it's the exact same thing that happened, where everybody was all hesitant, like, oh, all this piracy that we've been dealing with, we can't give them the files because then they'll just keep pirating.
Yeah.
And then you find out when you actually do give them a legitimate legal way to do it, that people actually don't really do that all that much.
Yeah, but I mean, piracy is still a big deal. I mean, you look at,
still going to happen, but there have been studies that when you give them people a legitimate way to do it, even if it's the exact same file, that they'll do the legitimate way, even if it costs more.
Yeah, but I seem to remember reading something like in the past year or so that the record industry was still suffering from piracy, and the movie industry, I mean, still getting hit, considering...
Well, there's a story right now going on about the Expendables 3.
Which did
leak onto the internet ahead of time, and they're really, really worried about opening box office on that. I think they should be worried, but not necessarily because of the piracy on that.
Well, there was a movie a couple of years ago. I wish I could remember, but it was a major
Wolverine
blockbuster movie. Yeah, it was Wolverine that was leaked, and then it did fine. So
yeah.
You know, that's exactly why I think even if somebody does. The comic stores had the same concern. If you give them digital comics, they won't come back to the store. Well, actually, no. They get the digital comic and they're like, this is awesome. I want the real thing, the print thing. And then they go to the store and they buy it. So, again,
that's,
I think even
that's really interesting to me, because that just seems like a special kind of, like, insanity. I mean, that's sort of the thing that keeps me from buying digital comics, like paying twice for the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that to me does not make sense at all.
I think what they do is they buy a first issue or two, and then and then they go buy the trade or something like that.
Gotcha.
Buy the exact same thing.
Gotcha.
Well, you know, it's similar to what's happened, you know, with, you know, people who bought movies on VHS and then DVD and then Blu-ray. You know,
sure.
Yeah, it happens. People, you know, things do change, mediums change, and people do get different versions of the same content, you know, in different mediums.
So do we think that this is like digital comics? Like, do you think that the thing that really keeps them going or makes them appealing is, well, A, the explosion of tablets and stuff like that, but I mean, just the fact of convenience, not having to have like long boxes, not being able to take, like, say, a whole run of whatever. I see that they have Howard the Duck on here. Like, if I could take the whole run of Howard the Duck on my tablet and read it on a trip from LA to New York, like, that to me is kind of an appealing thing, you know? I mean, do you think that sort of like part of the appeal of digital files as opposed to comics? I mean, couldn't you just take a book with you on a plane too, like a trade? I mean, I don't know. I guess what is the big appeal of besides the fact that, you know, obviously Mark Wade spoke about it a long time ago, that, you know, not every town has a comic shop, you know? Mm-hmm. What do you think is the appeal of digital comics?
Regardless of DRM free? Or just digital comics in general?
I mean, yeah, well, the DRM. I mean, I know what the convenience is for me. I mean, like, I
well,
have...
Yeah, you're moving, dude. You said that you've got 20 long boxes.
20 long boxes.
I mean,
yeah.
The idea, like, you know, what would you rather move? A couple of, you know, terabyte, you know, hard drives that fit in your pocket? Or would you rather move 20 long boxes?
I don't know. I really like having the physical thing. It's ridiculous.
I mean, but, you know, that is a definite, I think that's a definite asset. You know, the idea that, like, you've got all of this stuff. And the other thing, too, is the fact that, you know, one of the, when I was at the panel where they were remembering Will Eisner, you know, they were talking about one of the great things about everything being digital is that now it's there too, you know, it's out there, it's preserved, you know. Granted, drives crash and everything like that, but man, paper degrades so much quicker, you know. And
not if it's protected in my plastic and my
I think the main thing is probably A, it's convenient, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just really convenient to throw a bunch of files on your tablet and go.
Yeah.
It's portable, you know. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is too that it looks great. You know, things that are digital look really great. You know, I there's a certain nostalgia that does go with a lot of the printed stuff. And if you look at things like, have you seen the print of the Hip Hop Family Tree book?
Yeah.
The way, you know, it's designed to look like the old Marvel treasuries and everything like that. And they have that sort of faded color, and that's great. But, I mean, you know, digitally, things look really cool. Coloring, especially, looks just really pops on a tablet versus on a page.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. So, yes. I mean, oh, no, go ahead, Corey.
Well, especially if the coloring was done on a computer, you're really seeing it as, probably closer to what it was intended to look like than if it were printed.
Yeah.
You sound just like Joe Quesada there.
Oh, really?
Yes. Really? Why? What was Joe Quesada saying?
That's exactly what he said.
Oh, really?
You know, coloring has been done for years digitally on these fantastic screens. And he actually said that it was sort of almost a point of frustration, you know, like they'd be printed and it would look great, but it just didn't look the same way that it did, you know, when they signed off on it, you know.
Yeah,
and
now, I taught him that.
Yeah, there we go. I thought he had been.
The student has become the master. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, you are. You're seeing things, you know, the way that, you know, the creators are more closely sort of intending it.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
It's also about just having the option. I mean, obviously everything that you said, Christian and Paul, is true, you know, the convenience and just how it looks, but just giving more options. Like Wednesday morning, instead of being like, oh God, I gotta get to work, but then how do I get to the comic book store? And I can just, while I'm having breakfast, download what I want. And then for the stuff that I really want, I'm going to wait for it to, you know, I'm going to go buy it.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever, you know, like everybody has their little kind of like, you know, their little quirks of how they interact with the entertainment that they love. And this is just, it's just one more option.
Yeah. It's interesting because, you know, like I'll use The Walking Dead as an example. Like The Walking Dead, I've really enjoyed that comic for a long time. I'm just like a zombie head, whatever. And, you know, I think Robert Kirkman is really solid. And same thing with Invincible. But what ended up happening with, say, The Walking Dead with me is I stopped collecting the single issues probably 2 years ago because my comic shop, you know, demanded that, you know, you've got to have like, or the comic shop like that was within walking distance from my house, and I'm not going to say the name, but they said I had to have 5 books on my pull list for them to hold books for me, right? And so I basically just stopped, and I was like, you know what, I'll just order the hardcovers, which is what I was doing, you know, with Invincible. You know, Invincible is like one of my favorite superhero books, and you know, I would just wait like the year in between issues because I get this beautiful hardcover and, you know, it comes in the mail once a year and, you know, it's like a special treat, you know, and sure. I'm like, yeah. Ooh, my special treat just got here. But after the last book of the hardcover book of The Walking Dead, I got so tempted to go on Comixology and start reading the issues that I'd missed because I was like, holy cow, this shit has gone crazy. You know what I mean? But then I was like, I looked at the price and the prices were like $3.99 or something. They were like cover price. And I was like, I'm not going to pay $3.99 for this issue and then pay for the hardcover because I like having the hardcover. And that's where the wall for me, like really, I wish there was something. And now the Comixology is like, you know, mixed in with Amazon, if there was some way for like, say, me to pre-order, you know, like say I pre-ordered, you know, book 13, which I have, of The Walking Dead, you know what I'm saying, the hardcover, and they could charge me for it right there, and then they gave me the issues like on Comixology, like at a discount, say 50 cents, 99 cents, I might be okay with that. Like I might be like, okay, there's some sort of deal, there's some sort of combo that I'm getting, you know.
That's
what I'm saying?
Idea. That's a great idea. I love that.
Yeah, but I actually like this, you know, the thing that I was looking into on Monkey Brain, you know, where they did this big bundle, you know, it's like, if you like, you know, one of our titles, you might like the others. That's kind of a nifty way to do it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that what has to happen for a fan like me, especially somebody who's, you know, not poor, but on a budget, you know, we're all living, you know, on budgets, you know, I think that any smart person does, you know, who's not, you know, Rupert Murdoch. You know, I mean, I think that there that if you look at what your money's worth, there's definitely certain people who, and it's also, I guess, the preference of how you like getting it. You know, I mean, I've talked to people who pirate comic books, and they're like, I buy these, so I'm just pirating them, you know, so I can have them. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, I mean, I guess it kind of works. I don't know, you know, like, to me, it seems like, you know, there's, if I paid, like, I guess Marvel was doing this, right? Marvel was doing, like, I guess I bought the Infinity hardcover. I got it as a Father's Day gift. Mm-hmm. And I read on the cover of the book that there was like a digital code that you could enter. Now I bought mine used, you know, cause I got a gift certificate. That's what it was. I got a gift certificate for Father's Day, and I didn't get the digital code, but I guess there's gotta be some way, you know, to be
Both Marvel and DC have been doing that, where even with single issues, you get, you know, there's the normally priced issue, and then for $1 more, you get sort of like the sort of like digital slash print kind of bundle thing, and that comes with the code that you're talking about. And
interesting.
So you get both of them. You get both the print and then for $1 more, you get the digital version as well. So
how do they manage that? Do you have to provide like proof that you purchased the issue, or you just the code on the comic, I guess?
Yeah, they just,
I guess the code
just,
on the comic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You hold the physical copy up to your camera on the internet and
those like little things that you scan, I forget what they're called.
QR codes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure someone's working on that also.
Yeah,
it is. It does boil down to choice, you know. We are really spoiled for choice right now in terms of how we want to get our stories. We can get them physically, we can get them digitally, you know, we can get them, you know, in audio form, you know. It's there's really a lot of choices out there right now.
I'm gonna be starting up
now that it's DRM free. It seems that, yes.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, I was going to start up a new business where I would come to people's doors and do an interpretive dance of a story.
Corey.
That'll work.
Yeah, you'll have to do the Savage Dragon for me, just as a test.
Now I'm more willing to buy something now that I know that I'll have the file, rather than trust, you know, that somebody else's server is going to hold it for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is maybe I'm just an old fogey, but, you know, I have a friend who just recently discovered ported from like from iPhone to an Android phone. And he's like super excited now because, you know, he's just like, look at all these things I can do with Android and the cloud and Google. And I'm like, there's a part of me that's always like, I don't trust the cloud. You know what I mean? Because at any point, you know, whatever you store up there and the way that these big corporations operate, it's like you lose stuff. I could see, like, you know, some big data server company being like, oh, fuck it. You lost your kids' pictures for the rest of your life. Whereas, honestly, at home, I have like about 5 drives backing that up. But still, you know, I'm the one managing it. I'm the one taking care of it. And I guess that adds to sort of another question. If you have all these comics, you know, I mean, even drives and discs, those degrade over time. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I know that you could probably put your comics in a long box, keep them sealed in the plastic, you know, for years and years and years. God knows I have stuff that I've had probably over 10, 15 years still in a box somewhere. But then I guess the thing is, you know, with discs and drives, you would have to keep refreshing that. You know what I mean? Keep buying new drives or keep burning new discs, which, depending on the size of your collection, I guess would be, you know, I don't know how much of a task that would be. You know, if you had a giant collection of like 20 boxes worth of digital comics, you know, it might be a bit of a pain in the butt.
Seems like it would be easier than moving 20 long boxes full of paper comics.
Yeah, I guess.
Or, you know, if there's a fire, you know, and all your comics get, you know, it's like, well, you can't, there's nothing to back up because they're paper that just got torched, you know.
That's true. So, I mean, I guess there's no perfect, real super ultra perfect way to storage, whether it's in a data farm or your own personal drive or in a long box. There's no guarantees. So,
yeah, I mean, even, you know, there's, especially with technology companies, you know, every few months there's like, oops, somebody hacked into our system and all your data has been stolen, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean,
you
even
know,
even in like the Fortress of Solitude, that shit gets broken into all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So you guys don't think that this will affect comic shops? I mean, the ones that are out there, the ones that are surviving. You don't think that this sort of thing could hurt people?
I think it's already been sort of established that the smart stores know how to deal with digital, and the stores that are, you know, put up hurdles like something ridiculous as you need five to subscribe to five comics to get any sort of benefits or something stupid, are gonna, you know, will struggle. And I think the DRM. I mean, I'm a little bit. I'm not entirely convinced that the DRM. It's a certain type of consumer that is concerned about the DRM thing, and Comixology has had a very successful first 5 years or however long they've been in existence, and so I can't say that the number of people that DRM is an issue is so significant that it has held them back any. So I don't know if the influx of people that are now like, oh, DRM free, okay, now I'll buy from Comixology, will be so great that it would topple any stores. I don't know if their margin of error is that slim that it would tap into those people.
Yeah, I don't know, man, because I remember with music, you know, iTunes had a stranglehold on that for a long time.
Yeah.
And then when Amazon came along and they're like, we're going to offer digital files, and guess what? They're going to be DRM free. I mean, all of a sudden, Apple was like, whoa, hold on a minute. And then before you knew it, Apple was doing DRM free. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it's kind of apples and oranges because you're talking about comic book stores versus, and you know, iTunes, Amazon are direct competitors. And that's, you know.
Yeah, no, I mean, what I'm saying is that when you were saying about the influx of people who will all of a sudden start buying from Comixology, I mean, if Marvel and DC go that route, I mean, that could be huge.
Yeah, yeah, and I think they will eventually. I think they will.
I
don't think it'll ever go over all the way, though. I mean, I think you'll always have physical product, you know.
Oh yeah,
because
exactly.
People do want that, and honestly,
or do you think that people are going to order them online? Because Borders
be
is gone, Barnes and Nobles is struggling.
Yeah,
Diamond just reported that a lot of stores have moved into those empty and is expanding into those empty bookstores.
Yeah. You know, you're saying like other chains or other bookstores have like moved in to fill the gap?
No, other comic book stores are filling in that gap.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a comic book store could fill a giant Barnes and Noble space?
It could be part of one.
Yeah, they would rent out the bottom floor and somebody else would take the, you know.
Huh. Oh, wow. I hadn't heard about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, they just announced that recently. I mean, this is definitely kind of a somewhat flat year for comics, you know, the direct market anyway. But it's still an increase. It's slight, but there is an increase. More so in graphic novels.
Gotcha. Huh. So, I mean, basically what we're looking at is comic shops actually becoming some kind of specialized bookstores.
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably more similar to how they were, you know, a few years ago, you know, you go to a comic shop specifically for, you know, things that are comics and, you know, a little less than, I'll go to, you know, Barnes and Noble or Borders to pick up my manga or whatever, you know, you'll be able to get it at your local comic shop.
I think the smart stores too are kind of learning to be part of the community, you know, something like Meltdown where they have comedy shows and they have all these events and it's like a destination and there's a place in, I can't remember where now, but it's like a coffee shop / comic book store and, you know, Isotope in San Francisco, you know, like all these places that they're a comic book store, but there's this culture that they have created around it. It's not just like, hey, here's your comic. Bye.
So do you think that, this is interesting because when when Borders and Barnes and Noble and stuff started selling graphic novels, like, you know, in large amounts, there were a lot of comic shops that were freaking out about that. And a lot of people in the industry were worried that, you know, comic shops were going to get wiped out. So are we basically saying that the comic shop might have won the battle? And are we looking at sort of, because this is something that I've theorized for a while, you know, you're starting to see like big chain stores struggle and a couple of, you know, them close their doors or saying like that they can't compete anymore, you know? Mm-hmm. And could we be looking at the resurgence of like, say, mom and pop stores again, you know? Are the giant corporate shops or some of them beginning to cannibalize themselves and sort of take each other out?
Possibly.
Yeah. I mean, possibly. I think when you have a sort of a big box sort of mass market outlet versus a specialized niche out store that is smart and knows their product. And if you're going to go to a comic book store and you're like, I'm looking for, I'm looking for the latest novel, the comic book store is going to be like, I don't know. But if you're going, you know, so they, in that aspect, they cannot compete with a Barnes and Noble. But if you're going to a comic book store and you want a comic book store, you want a comic book or a graphic novel, they're going to be able to help you exponentially more than a bookstore and have a greater variety and probably better sales.
Uh-huh.
You know, better discounts and that sort of thing, better offers.
Yeah. I guess, and then, you know, yeah, I guess the whole thing is that then what part does Amazon play in this? You know what I mean? Obviously they own Comixology. You know, they can undersell pretty much any comic book store.
Yeah.
So I mean, like what part does Amazon play in this? Could they just come in and swoop and take the whole game because they sell physical copies and digital now through Comixology?
I think Amazon more won the war between the bookstores and comic book stores. I think Amazon was the one that kind of crushed those Barnes and Nobles and Borders and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think single issues is hard to compete. Single print issues is hard to compete with comic book stores. But
maybe they're winning digitally but not physically.
Perhaps. I mean, now that they have Comixology.
Yeah,
it's hard to know. I mean, certainly in the graphic novel section, that's a problem, you know. I mean, for comic book stores.
Yeah. So, I mean, are you saying that you think the pamphlet is keeping comic book stores alive?
Yeah, I think that's probably safe to say.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you think that a lot of people are still buying pamphlet books, even though they're like $3.99, $4.99 each?
Yeah, I mean, the sale, you know, sales are, they, after the new 52 came out, they increased pretty significantly and pretty steadily. Only till this year did it start to sort of level off. And even so, it's a little up. Maybe, you know, it depends on kind of how you look at it. You know, you could argue it's a little bit down. But the sales, the individual, like, unit sales of individual comic book issues is significantly higher than the unit sales of graphic novels.
Huh. I wonder
In the direct market.
So how much does that number compare, say, I'm wondering, versus before the recession? You know what I mean? I'm wondering because there was definitely some attrition that happened. And I went to Illinois recently to visit, you know, my in-laws. Mm-hmm. And I found a comic book shop there in Champaign-Urbana. And I forget what the name of the place was, but first of all, it was kind of hard to find because before the recession, and I talked to the guy behind the counter, before the recession hit, you know, they had a storefront that like had a window and, you know, they were facing the street. And then after the recession hit, you know, the rent went up and they had to move into the building and you literally had to, like, I was using Google Maps to find it, like to walk to it, and it kept directing me around the building, and it basically was inside the building, and you wouldn't know unless there was like some big sign. But I went in and I talked to him and I was like, how have you guys been doing, like, you know, surviving? And he's like, well, we had to move back here, but he's like, you know, like you said, Corey, you know, we made an effort to reach out to our customers and, you know, and sales, you know, kind of stayed good. And another shop that wasn't as friendly or involved with their customer base shut down, you know, and basically, you know, he's like, we've been doing okay. And it also helps that they're in a college town or near a giant university, and that they are the only shop in like hundreds of miles, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Whatever, miles and miles and miles. So mm-hmm. it was just really interesting to get their take, because, you know, a couple of years ago, and he even said this, that shops were like, it was really tough. Like, they almost didn't make it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely been some lean years, and their, you know, and their profit or margin is really slim anyway.
Yeah.
So something, you know, like, you know, a poor month can kill a store, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough.
But, you know, one of the things that we are seeing is the, you know, real estate market even out in terms of, you know, commercial real estate. And so a lot of things were empty for a long time. People are moving in to fill them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting because what I've noticed in some neighborhoods is, like, you would have these places clear out, and then you've got these, like, no-name shops, which are kind of, like, less, you know, well-kept or whatever, but they're moving in, you know what I mean? Uh-huh. And it's really interesting because you're sort of seeing these areas that were kind of nice before the recession. Now they've got, like, these sort of, like, dinky no-name stores that maybe aren't so appealing to the eye as, you know, what used to be there. So, I mean, things are kind of making a strange rebound, but nothing's really bouncing back for sure.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I was really kind of thunderstruck when I saw that Comixology made this announcement. I was like, holy cow. You know, but I mean, I just think that they started, like, you know, let's be honest, if you go on a torrent site, it's all there. Like, if you look hard enough, it's there, you know. I mean, a lot of the stuff is already out there.
Yeah.
People are bootlegging it like crazy. And not just comics, but movies, TV shows, you know. So, I mean, to me, it's really interesting how much the entertainment industry has been able to say to people, like, look, don't do that. Like, that's not cool. What you want to do is, you know, buy it legally, and we're going to give you the channels to do that, and how they've been able to maintain, keep things on an even keel, because, you know, logic would dictate that everyone would just be like, free for all, just get everything, you know, let's go crazy, you know.
I want to talk to you a little bit something, an interesting thing that I learned just from my brief time abroad.
Yeah.
When I was doing, I was part of a theater group, and we toured in Australia, and mm-hmm. We charged admission to our shows. And I mean, we were a bunch of street theater, and we weren't professionals or anything, but this idea of charging was really strange to me. I'm like, well, you know, shouldn't we be doing this for free? And what we were told is, you know, well, that's not the Australian attitude. The Australian attitude is, if you're offering something for free, it's not worth anything.
Mm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If, you know, you do have to charge something in order to show that you are worth something. And
yeah.
I think that there is a little bit of, you know, to a degree, there is a bit of that. You know, people need, they want to pay for, you know, something that does affect them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
they do want to do the right thing, you know. Granted, you know, you do have people who are just bootleg, you know, but those are fewer, and that attitude's not as prevalent as, you know, we Americans might, you know, think it is.
Huh.
And that, I mean, that's a great point, and the fact that, you know, people are going to there's going to be pirates, you know, like, there's, you're never going to, like, it's never going to be like 100%, like, everybody now, you know, just locks arms and walks together to the store and buy, you know, it's going to be there. And so why inconvenience the people that do kind of do it legally and right, with these weird, you know, weird, sort of semi half files, or, you know, these weird restricted files, instead say, yes, you know, you're a customer of mine and I trust you, here. You purchase this, here you go. and that sort of thing kind of a little bit ties into to what Paul is talking about as far as like the value of, like, you're saying you just gave me $3.99, here is the thing, instead of like, you gave me $3.99, here look through my window, and you're kind of attaching the value.
Let me ask you this: how many of you, like, do you guys read comics on Comixology?
Yeah, somewhat.
Yeah, I mean, somewhat meaning like.
Actually, I don't really. I've got a few Infinite comics through the Marvel store, but I don't really have any through Comixology.
Gotcha.
I do a lot of the free ones, and then I'll do. There's a couple like Marvel titles that I buy.
Oh really? Like on a regular basis, Corey? Or
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting. How many, just out of curiosity?
It's usually two a month, but sometimes they come out like twice a month or something.
What are you reading, Corey?
Well, of course, it's New Warriors and Nova.
Oh my God, that's so funny. So you're such a fan that you couldn't resist. Like, right. You were like, I've got to do this.
Yeah, it was either I was gonna go to the store every month or every twice a month, or I'll just buy the digital version. And so I decided I'll buy the digital version. But you know, like we were talking about, where it's like, you know, when the trades come out, I'm going to go to the store down the street and I'm going to buy it. So I'll
really,
you know, yeah.
Wow. So you're like what they want. You're like the mega fan.
Yeah. I mean, for those stories, it's like, I'm the sucker for those. And so I'm going to go, I'll be the idiot and pay twice. But for other stories, it's like, I'll get the first issue that's often free or something like that, read it and be like, that was pretty good. Okay, I'm going to go get the trade. And then for the vast majority, I buy the trade. Like, I'll go to there's this great store down the street that I discovered that usually has discounts on their trades and stuff like that. And so I'll go buy the trade paperbacks. So mostly I prefer prints, but I like using Comixology or digital to sample stuff and to kind of like read the first issue and be like, yeah, that's pretty cool if I hear good buzz about something.
You know, what's interesting is I've been very tempted to purchase something recently off of Comixology, because there was a series that when I was clearing out my long boxes, there's an indie series that I found, and I was like, oh man, these guys that I discovered at Comic-Con, it's called The Sentinels. And I would love to get them on the podcast, you know, because I pulled out these books and I was like, and they were black and white, you know. And so they did four trades, and it's sort of like a Teen Titans sort of, you know, riff kind of comic book. Mm-hmm. And basically was looking through the trades, and they were done in black and white and, you know, gray tones and stuff like that. I was like, man, I used to like this book. And I just happened to just like Google them. And apparently they started taking this book and reissuing it. They like went back to the beginning and have recolored them like gone into Photoshop and like kind of redrawn certain aspects of it. Hmm. And they're offering it on Comixology for like 99 cents. And I was like, oh, well, there you go. Like, I bought these trades years ago, and this is doing something different. Like, that to me seems like almost like the perfect, sure, you know, perfect deal, you know, where it's like,
totally,
okay, like that's great. And I was just thinking, wouldn't it be really awesome if you could go through your long boxes and take them to a place like, I know I'm going to make comic fans shudder, like recycling place or maybe even a comic book store. And you could say like, here's all my issues of, just to use an example, I love this series. Don't get upset with me. Like, take all my issues of my old issues of Batman and the Outsiders, you know, and say, here, I'll give you these if you give me DRM free, you know what I mean? Digital files so that I can have forever. You know what I'm saying?
I'd like that. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that would be a really, I mean, if you could do that. Now, I don't know what value that gives to any comic book store or, you know, company that wants them. But, you know, I just think that that if you could do something like that, if there was some kind of like big recycling effort, you know, think about how many comic books are just sitting out there. You know, I know I got 20 boxes. I can't read all that stuff. Like, you know, I'm not going to go back to a lot of that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, to tell you guys the honest truth, I wish I could find a retailer and go through everything that I absolutely felt I had to keep, John Byrne, and, you know, basically, you know, get rid of a lot of the other stuff, you know, that I didn't need or would never look at again, you know? So, I mean, if there was some kind of, like, strange like trade-in that you could do with your physical copies, that would be even greater, you know?
I'd sign up for that. I've got a closet full of boxes that, yeah, same thing. It's like I never open them. I'm just going to read from box 17, you know? Move them all and, you know, like, you know, it's like if I have the thought of like, oh, I want to look at that issue again, I'm like, oh, please let it start with the letter A.
Yeah, then, yeah, know. Yeah. Oh, I know.
And if it doesn't, I'm like, never mind.
Yeah, I don't think I've read anything from like K through M. You know?
I think that all of us nerds just thought like that we'd always just be able to go to a box and pull stuff out, that it would never get like this out of control. Yeah. And I mean, and to a lot of nerds, it's not out of control. You know, I mean, I think we know people that who have like tons and tons of comics and they just think that that's totally fine. And to them it is, but you know, to somebody like maybe us who are, you know, limited space in our homes, you know, not, you know, maybe someday when we retire, quote unquote, like that's ever going to happen the way the economy's going. But, you know, we could sit around as old men and read our comics and play our role-playing games like we were teenagers again. But you know what I'm saying? Like maybe when that day comes, I'll go through boxes and start. But right now, I just don't see it happening. Yeah. You know, I just looked at the image section. Was that supposed to happen immediately, like the DRM thing? Or was there going to be a time, like, was there a time stamp? Like, come in October, you'll be able to do this.
No, I think if you go now, everything that you have already downloaded from those publishers should have the option where you can do backup files.
That's amazing.
Wow.
That's amazing. Well, here's the thing is like, here's a series or at least a first issue that I liked. I happened to see it at the comic book store, Burn the Orphanage, from Image. I think Cena Grace is the artist. And, you know, the first issue is 99 cents, but the two issues after it are $5, $4.99. And I'm like, $5 for a digital file? Yeah. Are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, yeah, I don't know about that. Like, that's where you start to get a little crazy, you know? I mean, I know it's an indie comic. I know it's a creator-owned sort of thing. But come on. You got to stick with me.
Maybe it's extra big or something?
It doesn't say. That's the other thing that I noticed. Like, they don't seem to give you information on page counts. You know, like, how many pages? Like that would be
really nice to know.
Yeah. I mean, if it's $5 and it's, oh, here we go. 47 pages at the bottom of the page, like sort of, you had to scroll down 47 pages, $5. That's still a bit of a stretch when I can pick up, when I go to the Viz section and they have like the full, you know, 100-page Naruto comic for the same price.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like 200-page Naruto comic. That's kind of stretching it. And Naruto kicks ass, let me tell you right now. That's something like if Viz...
How much does it kick ass, Cole?
It kicks ass. A lot of ass.
Okay.
All kinds of anime ass. I love Naruto. I actually want to do a podcast about Naruto, but I don't know. I can't find anybody else to talk about it with me. Anyway, so I don't know. Do you guys... what? You guys are laughing at me.
No.
It's a good show.
I think I have the first... book, you know, manga book of that. It was pretty funny.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's the thing is Naruto, the comic was one of those books that I looked at and I was like, this is simple enough that I could probably do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's not that it's bad, but it's like, oh, look at how the energy and that's jumping off the page. And this guy's a really good artist, but it's not like, it's not like Western standards. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to insult it. But anyway, they've got them on Comixology for like $5 for like 200. Here, let me look it up right now. I mean,
this is all just a ploy to get me into Naruto, isn't it?
No, it isn't. You're not going to like it. I think there's, for some reason, there's just me that...
Well, it's a huge. That's like one of the biggest
It is huge, hits. But it's huge amongst teenagers. I don't know how huge it is amongst grown-ups. 42-year-old, you know, heading towards middle age, guys. I don't think that that's. But anyway, do you guys have any other thoughts, like, regarding, like, this whole DRM thing? Because, I mean, there's just so much to talk about.
I just think, you know, I think it's good news. I'm surprised, like you, I was very surprised. It seemed like every time the topic was raised that it would just be sort of stonewalled. And I know one of the, you know, in one of the press pieces that they issued, or one of the statements they issued, they would get asked on every comic convention panel, you know, every time they had a panel, they'd be like, so when are you gonna, you know? And so I think, you know, who I think may have been Chip Mosher or somebody, was like, I'm glad to not have to ever answer that question again.
thank God.
That's funny. Oh, yeah. Well, see, this is the point that I was getting to about Naruto, is the fact that, like, these are all on Comixology, but, like, any manga fan that I've run into that loves Naruto, there's all these scanslation sites. And I've actually talked to people who are like, I just read the scanslation site. And I'm like, that's kind of messed up, because then who's supporting all these, like, you know, it looks like here on Comixology, there's something like 65 manga, you know, editions of just the first series of Naruto.
Right.
I'm not even talking about the follow-up, Shippuden. So, I mean, how does this play out? I mean, what happens when you release the hounds, you know, and say, like, I can download this copy of Naruto? Do all those scanslation sites start uploading the legit files? You know, I mean...
Yeah, good question. I don't know.
You could be opening the door to Crazy Town.
I know that...
That door has been open for a very long time.
Yeah, I think manga has suffered more from pirates than you know, Western comics. The manga's really contracted over the last, you know, I don't know, 5 years or something. And in fact, I think the Japanese government is just about to launch an initiative where they're actually going to actively pursue those sites and
try and shut them down. Well, that's cool. I mean, gosh knows, $5 for 200 pages of Naruto. That's not a bad deal.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So, all right. Any closing thoughts on this subject, or?
I have no closing thoughts on this subject today.
That car alarm in the distance sounds it does. I know, it's all right. It's not your fault. So what about you, Corey? Any other thoughts?
It's saying bye, 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 bye.
All right. Well, cool. This has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. And thanks for joining me, Paul Edwards and Corey Blake. I think this is a subject that a lot of comic fans are like, you know, really interested in, and, you know, want to see how this all plays out. You know, is it going to be disastrous, or is it going to be something that just, you know, helps the comic book industry in general? So good deal. All right. Well, thanks for listening to this episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Hopefully we are going to be back next week with Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Woo! Excellent.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I'm doing part-time.
Part-time fanboy.